Normally, I'd just be all excited to ask you about how the snow leopards are doing and talking about flamingos. And I do want to talk about flamingos and the zoo's birthday. But, of course, you were actually the first person I thought of when I saw this horrific story of tragedy in Cincinnati at the zoo. And if you haven't been following along with the news lately, folks, there was a new headline today about the fact that the district attorney in Cincinnati had decided not to press charges against the mother. Some people had petitioned that she should be charged with child endangerment or something that would make her semi-responsible for what turned out to be the death of a gorgeous primate inside the Cincinnati Zoo due to no fault of the zoos. Mm-hmm. You were the first person I thought of because we have a somewhat of a connection, do we not, between the Miller Park Zoo and the Cincinnati Zoo? Because we work with so many other zoos.
Right. I have a connection with them for multiple reasons. One is that's where some of our flamingos came from. So we've been working closely with them. I visited there about a year and a half ago on the way back from Pittsburgh. I know five or six of their staff members, one of them for about 15 years.
And that's so, the head of the large mammals.
So yeah, he runs the mammals.
So familiar with the
he's
primates.
Been there long enough that he probably helped hand raise that gorilla.
Because that gorilla was born in captivity in Cincinnati.
Yep.
And was a beautiful beast that was lost in a tragic accident. Or not accident. What were your thoughts after getting all of the information on the story as to what happened, what could have been done as a zookeeper? What was your thought?
Well, you know, no one wins from this situation. It's just one of those things that happens. It is, you know, I've been asked a couple times how I felt about what happened and about the decision. From what I know, and again, I try not to speculate what happened. From what I've seen, what I know. Is I totally support the decision that they made. We believe that human life comes first, and at our facility, our philosophy, our protocols are if human life is at risk, we are to shoot the animal. And that's an incredibly hard thing to do. I can't imagine what they're going through there, but you know, it's no one wins from it. We lost a beautiful animal from this situation, and you know. You know, I
was heartbroken when I read the story. I know
sat
it's hard for you to talk about.
And stared at my screen for about 5 minutes before I actually could write an email to the folks that I know there to let them know that I support them and they're not alone. But, it, you know, I thought at the end of the 5 minutes, I thought about, well, maybe I shouldn't write this. Maybe I should just, if they're constantly hearing these things, it just brings it back. But I thought they should hear that we support them and they're not in this alone. Tragedies like this happen, and they'll move on and learn from it.
Jay, you've worked in multiple zoos beyond, of course, the Miller Park Zoo. You've worked in much bigger facilities. So in every zoo, there must be some sort of plan should an animal escape. Is it normal to also have a plan for should a human get into the enclosure?
I've been in places, and we have a code here where it's a person at risk. So typically that means animals, someone's in an exhibit where they shouldn't be. So we have a certain procedure that we follow. It's much like an animal escape. If someone's is at risk and could be injured, we are probably going to dispatch that animal. And, you know, again, I hate saying that, but human life will come first. For us, the tiger is probably our most dangerous animal that we have. But everyone I've talked to, and you know, we talk about it often, is do you have the ability to pull the trigger? You're close with that animal, but can you still make the decision to save the human life if that's what it comes down to?
You've met other zookeepers who have had to make this decision before. Cincinnati is not alone in having to, as you said, very PC, dispatch an animal in the case of a human life being at risk. Mm-hmm. The danger that was to that child was not inflated for this story. That animal could have unfortunately hurt that child by accident, even if it wasn't trying to do it.
Absolutely. Gorillas are 6 to 7 times stronger than a human, and this is a 4-year-old child, and this is a pretty much close to a full maturity male gorilla, one of the strongest animals that's out there.
And it's true that the tranquilization options really weren't an option.
Yeah, it's one of the greatest myths in the world that tranquilizers take effect immediately, because that's what they do in movies. Tranquilizers, I've been in immobilizations where we're going to do a physical on a tiger or a snow leopard, one of the apes, and then tranquilizer never takes effect. The animal never shows the effects of being tranquilized. I've seen it take 20 minutes. I've seen it take 30 seconds. By darting the animal, you could have agitated, and it could have been worse. So I don't believe they made the wrong decision. I believe from the video that I've seen and from what I've read that they made the right decision in this circumstances, but they knew what was going on. They knew the behavior of their gorilla better than anybody else in the world. They were the ones who should make the decision. So even if I was to say I would second guess them, which I don't, that's not from it doesn't matter. It matters what they felt was the best decision at the time, and I got to stand by whatever that decision is.
And who makes that decision if the zookeeper or head honcho is not right in the presence of the accident? You could have been off at a meeting. You could have been anywhere. Who else is in charge of making that choice?
Every zoo that I know of has a protocol for exactly that. Who's in charge? So for us, I make the final decision, but if I'm not available, then it's our curator. If the curator is not involved, it's with the highest seniority keeper from that area.
How far away are the weapons, if necessary?
So they're 2-3 minutes away. So in, depending on where the staff are, seconds.
And it's up to the zoo to actually take responsibility instead of calling in the authorities in our community.
We'll call 911. We won't get the police rolling because if we're getting the guns out, it's serious. But if we want to be the one who makes the decision, the tiger's probably are one that has, we would probably shoot the tiger above any other animal. Snow leopards are they're kind of cowards. So unless they're threatened, they're probably going to leave somebody alone, where a tiger could be very aggressive towards someone.
I just saw a video that was shared on social media today of a small little boy at a Japanese zoo. Big glass wall. His face is, he's a toddler, smushed up against the glass, looking at the big lion. He turns his back to wave at mommy, who's videotaping on her cell phone, and the lion charges the glass and attacks and is very frustrated that he finds glass between him and what he thought was a snack.
Yep.
So there are things that happen. We're talking with Jay Tetzloff, director of the Miller Park Zoo, and, of course, Bloomington Parks and Rec. Every zookeeper on the planet looked at their zoo a different way after what happened in Cincinnati and the outcry heard around the world. Do you think there's any changes that we need to make for the protection of the animals?
You know, I'll guarantee every zoo has looked at their zoo. I have here. I found an item or a spot in our zoo probably about 6 months ago that we addressed. We thought, you know, here's a spot where if somebody's not paying attention, somebody could get to a spot where they didn't, you know, it was, you know, if you do this, it had to be a perfect storm for them to get to that spot. But it's not worth it. Again, here example, it's not worth the risk. So we took care of, put up a little extra fence. No one probably even noticed it, but we did. We want to make sure our guests, our animals, our staff are safe at all times. Without safety, there's nothing.
Do I ever have to worry about a wallaby deciding on one day? Because that's the most amazing exhibit that you can walk through, and it's not really a barrier between the patrons on the sidewalk and the animals in the exhibit. There is a bigger enclosure, obviously, but it always amazes me that I can walk through that exhibit and go, they're right there.
Yeah.
Do I ever have to worry about a wallaby deciding one day that I just don't measure up?
When I got here, we had a wallaroo female, so it's about a 4-foot animal, that went through people's strollers.
Looking for a snack?
Probably. And, you know, after I think the second time I had heard about it, then I saw it myself, and I'm like, okay, she probably shouldn't be in a walkthrough exhibit like we have. So she went to the zoo in Seattle, where they have it's not a walkthrough exhibit, and she produced offspring there. But it wasn't worth the risk. Because they could injure people just not trying, more of seeing what's there. But, you know, we can get away with a walkthrough exhibit where a lot of big zoos, big communities couldn't, because it's a short fence for our guests to just step over. And people have such high regard for our rules and our this community and our zoo. They respect the barriers. And, you know, maybe once or twice a year we'll see somebody who steps over. A lot of times it's just to get a better picture. But really, we're not concerned about that. The wallabies and wallaroos that are in there don't really want you to come close to them. And that's why it works, is if you walk towards them, they'll just slowly move around the corner away from you. And that's why it works. It's a great exhibit, a great way for people to see those guys up close and personal and hopefully learn from what they're seeing. We want to save those species.
All right. Last question about the safety of the animals as well as the safety of the patrons, just because of the story in Cincinnati. Here on WJBC, is there a worry that if the reindeer or the Rhineback or any of the goats come over and put their heads over the fence, you know, kind of in the petting zoo area? Because, like, if I'm standing next to Susie Oley and those reindeer love her, mm-hmm. And they come over, is it okay to pet them at that point?
We would not allow you to pet something that we didn't feel okay with.
Okay.
If you notice that the Longhorn exhibit and the Randall Lineback, there's a lot of rocks up front, mm-hmm. and that's to make it uncomfortable for the Longhorn to come up close to you. He does not mean to hurt anyone. I don't think he would intentionally.
Because Lord Antioch really likes you and a lot of other people.
He has 85 inches of horn. And as he turns it, he's careful about not hitting someone. But if a lot of people are there, we just don't want to take that chance. It would be an accident. It's not intentional on his part. But he's 1,800 pounds, you know, and 85 inches of horn. He's a big animal. So we just added some rocks there to make it uncomfortable for him to come all the way up. You can still get really close to him, mm-hmm. but he can't reach his head over the rail anymore.
Okay. 5 years on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Dunk tank running all day,
yep.
with you and chiefs of police and fire of WJBC, Laura Ewan, Dan Swaney hopping,
yep.
in the dunk,
yep.
tank. Alderman Scott Black has volunteered to be in the dunk tank. I was supposed to be in the dunk tank, broke my leg, good excuse. I got a doctor's note.
We'll get you next time.
I hate being in dunk tank, so I really salute the people who are getting into the dunk tank. And if you go up and play the dunk tank, what's the money going to at the birthday party?
All of it's going to our conservation fund.
Nice.
All of it.
And the conservation fund is obviously established to try and recreate animals that are going extinct in the wild. Yes?
Yeah, we write a check to the Snow Leopard Trust, and they're working in Central Asia to save the snow leopard. We're going to start a project here locally that I've tasked our new curator with to come up with a conservation project to do locally, and we'll utilize that money for that project.
Some of these conservation projects work really well. When I was a kid, I was told that bald eagles were going to go extinct in my, mm-hmm. lifetime unless something was done. Something was done. Now we have bald eagles that occasionally zoom over my house.
Yeah, yep.
And it's absolutely amazing. Tell me why, though, 125 years ago, we got a zoo. You told me off the air we're the 13th oldest zoo in the country.
13th oldest, 1891, is the first paperwork we have of city dollars, in essence, going to take care of animals in Miller Park. So from what I have read, it was probably elk, maybe some white-tailed deer, maybe bison is pretty much all I've really been able to gather from historical stuff so far.
But yet the Katofer Animal Building was built for a very specific reason.
Yeah, Big Jim was a lion cub that fell off a circus train in the really early 1900s, and they built the animal building for Big Jim. Unfortunately, he passed away before the building was finished. But the building opened in 1914. So when you see the area where the bear, snow leopards are, that's a building that's over 100 years old now.
My goodness. In a cornfield, you just suddenly find a wild lion, or no, he said tiger.
That's lion cub.
Excuse
is
me.
Pretty much all we know.
Lion cub, and you're able to, A, capture it, B, hold on to it,
yeah.
and treat it well enough that you were then kind enough to look for a new home.
Yep.
Most people are surprised a community our size even has a zoo,
yeah.
let alone to be one of the oldest, mm-hmm. in the United States of America. Is amazing. So with the birthday party on Saturday, what else is happening?
So we'll have the dunk tank you talked about, mm-hmm. bounce house.
Oh, and by the way, 93 degrees on Saturday with,
yeah.
sunny skies.
Be a good time to be in the dunk
good
tank.
Good time to be in the dunk tank. I'd pick the afternoon hours if I was,
yes,
going to be in.
And that's, I think I said I'll do anything, and I think that's where I'll be in the afternoon.
Well, I would choose the afternoon.
So,
and
yeah,
I would fill
warmer.
It on Friday, so by
that's
Saturday.
That's what Laura said as I was walking in.
Gets a chance to warm up just a little bit.
Star Wars guys will be there from 10 to 1. Superheroes from 1 to 4. Birthday cake, bounce house, crafts activities. Oh, and by the way, the zoo's there.
Yeah, and the zoo. And, you know, it was funny. I, of course, got laid up with my broken ankle, and weird things were going through my brain. Hello, painkillers and too much time on your hands. But my parents have been very anxious to come visit the zoo because they hear these conversations through the WJBC app where they listen. And all of a sudden, I realized, well, between Dad's knee surgery and my broken ankle, one or both of us are going to need a wheelchair. Just out of love, you provide those for free at the zoo.
Yeah, if someone asks for a wheelchair, if someone asks for a stroller, we provide those. We don't have a ton. I think we have two really good wheelchairs and one that we'll use in an emergency and someone has to have one. A few strollers, and all those have pretty much been donated over time, and nice gesture for someone to give.
In case anybody's listening?
I think we're always looking for more. Storage becomes an issue, but I'd rather have too many wheelchairs that I could pull out of a closet from someplace. Or sometimes parts go bad, and if we can change out parts, because we want to make sure everyone's come to the zoo and enjoy the zoo.
We're not talking about those
walk or can't walk.
We're not talking about those electric scooters like you sometimes find in a
right.
big box store. We're talking about just a wheelchair, and
yep.
and for people who maybe are good to go small distances, but the zoo can become a long distance if you stop and see everything.
Yeah, and
that's
know,
a generous
yeah,
offer.
We know
for
people
doing it
fly
for
in and visit, and maybe Grandpa doesn't walk very well.
Yep.
And we just want to provide a service that people can enjoy our zoo. That's what we want them to do, is enjoy the zoo.
Well, I can't wait to get back to the zoo once you welcome the flamingos in. And I need you to stick around so we can talk about
okay.
that after headlines. News starts now at the WJBC News Desk with Greg Hallbleib. All the departments, and got a big birthday party on Saturday and great weather forecast
mm-hmm.
for it. But after Saturday's big party, the next big event at the Miller Park Zoo will be the opening officially of the flamingo exhibit. How's it look?
It's looking fantastic. We will start the planting and fence work and some sidewalk stuff. But I asked everybody, I'm thinking June 24th, and everybody says we should be able to hit that with as long as weather holds up. And so my sleepless nights have started. And but we're going to open the exhibit June 24th, do the ribbon cutting, do all the fun stuff. And another reason to join and become a member of our zoo the night before, so the Thursday night before, we allow members in that night to get a sneak peek
Ooh.
Of the exhibit. So it's an opportunity for provide more service than just a financial reason
mm-hmm.
to become a member. And you'll be one of the first ones.
I really think you need to raise the price of your membership. I'm not kidding. It's too cheap. I've never seen a membership that low. It's a little over $60
for $60 for a family.
Entire family.
Yep.
For 12 months from whatever month you start in.
Right. Yep. If you buy it in May, it's good through May of next year.
And that's some people's savior because you have a large family and
mm-hmm.
it's extended family. And it's, it, you know, it's an incredible offer for 60 some dollars. Usually it's about one trip to the zoo for a large family
mm-hmm.
in other cities.
Yeah.
And here you could go every single day.
Yeah.
True or false, your flamingos are actually already here.
We have more than 20 birds on site. They are up in our hospital. In a quarantine room. The second group came in late Thursday night, and they all get along great, and we're really looking forward to showing them off.
Now, you and I talk animal transport stories every once in a while because it's a hidden story side
mm-hmm.
of animal business, and I'm always fascinated as to how these animals move. And when you were here last time, there were debates on nylon, socks,
yeah, right,
different things.
Right.
So how did they move?
In both cases of the shipments, we used crates. So large wooden crates that we could fit two. There was two compartments in each crate, so each compartment had a bird in it. So we got enough birds from Sedgwick County Zoo in Wichita, Kansas, that we needed to rent a vehicle to haul all the crates back. So we've got more than 20 birds ready to show off to people. And I opened the door to someone in the parks office who was visiting and immediately saw that excitement of, oh, my goodness, this is great. And re-energized me because this project's had some challenges over the last few years.
And some misconceptions.
So, yeah, so actually birds are here. The exhibit's pretty much in our hands at this point. Staff, park staff, zoo staff will be finishing up the exhibit with some little things to save money, like the landscaping. We're doing that at about a fourth the cost to do it ourselves. And now that we've set a date, the clock's ticking. And
what are they eating? I have no idea what
they get. A
they
grain.
Eat. Okay.
There's a grain made for flamingos in zoos.
There's flamingo food.
And
is it pink?
It is. It actually is. It's a grayish to pink.
Because I was told that the reason that flamingos are pink is because they eat a whole bunch of shrimp.
It is 100% from their diet. It is 100% from the diet.
So if you don't keep adding the pink in, we won't have pink flamingos.
Well, it is from what they eat, and part of that diet does have that nutrient in there that causes the pink. I want to make sure everyone realizes greater flamingos is the species we're working with. It's the largest species. We have a male that's about 5 feet tall.
That's why I love them.
They
They're
are
just
not
so
the bright pink that people might envision.
True.
Those, you know, if you've been, say, to Florida, maybe to Central America, you see a very, very pink flamingo. Those are Caribbean flamingos. It's a totally different species. Ours are a lighter pink and have a very prominent pink along one of their wings.
Are they social birds? Are they kind?
They're incredibly social.
Are they cute and cuddly to their keepers who they get to
no.
know? Okay. When a flamingo's mad, what does it do?
When we picked up one of them, Blue 18, so they have tags.
Right.
And so he said, Blue 18's a troublemaker. So we Thursday night, we get him out of the crate, let him go in the room, and take 3 steps back and starts coming after us. Stops right away, goes back. But it's like, okay, now we know why we have you. You're the trouble. You're the troublemaker. But he hasn't been a troublemaker since we got him.
I don't know. Are they headbutters?
They'll bite.
Kick?
They'll pinch.
Okay, with their beak.
With their beak.
And that's a pretty big size beak. Now, you have to be careful that you don't lose a finger with other kinds of big birds. Can a flamingo take your finger off?
No, it's going to be like someone grabbing you with pliers. It's going to be a big pinch.
Okay, it's going to hurt.
It's going to hurt. It does hurt.
In the new design of the exhibit, do we have to worry about anybody getting their fingers pinched?
We only have a single fence between people and the birds. Flamingos don't tend to like people, so they'll stay away from people. Even when I just open the door in the room, they move towards the back of the room.
Okay.
That's what's more comfortable for them. A lot of animals do that. That's fine. That's actually, we designed the exhibit for that behavior. So we have safe zones for the birds to go and feel comfortable with where... But we don't need to have two fences between them and people. It's not that kind of species.
And when the flamingos are out, is the possibility we'll see baby flamingos in the future with eggs? Or I assume they do an egg.
Yeah, that's the goal. The nesting site that people will see, that the full point of that part of the exhibit is to reproduce in the future.
Will we have then too many flamingos at some point?
There's that possibility, which is not a bad thing because there's a higher demand than there is zoos producing flamingos right now. At one point, 2 years ago, when we said, okay, we're building this exhibit, here's what we're doing, I went to the breeding program and I said, okay, in this time frame, we're going to open this exhibit. He goes, well, I don't have any. What do you mean you don't have any? A few zoos have built new exhibits and moved their 100-plus collection to a new exhibit and they stopped breeding.
Oh.
So we've had to find these birds on our own.
Okay.
But got some great matches, and we have a breeding colony of flamingos already.
Well, we've had so many other successful animal breedings, including, of course, snow leopards and red wolves and otter pups and more. Mm-hmm. Is at that point in time where you auction off, well, I got a snow leopard baby that's going to be looking for a new home and a breeding program, and you've got some flamingos. Let's make a deal.
In the breeding programs, we don't have to do that because we have someone like myself looking out for snow leopards. I'm looking at genetics and good matches, and we're making all those puzzles fit. It's the animals that don't have the breeding programs, like San Clemente Island goats, like hedgehogs, animals where we are breeding for other zoos, or we may do a trade. Always working out, trying to work deals. I just came back from a conference and had some transactions, trying to figure out, make that work. And
speaking of those transactions, just as a timeline, how much longer do we have our two baby snow leopards who are getting bigger every day?
We'll find out in July where they're going to go. And then I'm guessing September, October, they'll go to their new institutions. They'll go separately. And we've been training them and getting them used to being by themselves because they'll go to a zoo by themselves. They will not go as a pair.
As a pair. They're so adorable. You got to get down to the Miller Park Zoo because they just get cuter every day as they get bigger. And then before you know it, they're going to lose that cubness.
Yeah, they're almost the size of mom, but they still have the kid face. They're super active. They're fun to watch still. Absolutely.
Very much. Every day is a good day at the Miller Park Zoo. Learn more online and follow them on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. If you are following Cats of Instagram and you're not following the Miller Park Zoo, you are missing out on some of the greatest animal pictures daily. Thank you, Jay Tetzlaff.
Thanks for having me.
Your chat. Come back soon and make an announcement sometime soon, will you? Otherwise,
absolutely.
I'm going to have to throw some things at you. 9:40.